Hello, everyone. Just want to give you a quick note at the top of the pod. We dealt with some major technical difficulties, and we recorded this podcast last week with REA Schwartz, and we're just now able to release it after some magic done by one of my friends who's a sound engineer. So I thank him for helping me with that. And yeah, I apologize for the late release, but here is the conversation with REA. Welcome to another edition of the Skyhook Podcast. I'm James Kay, and on the line with me, as always, my dude, my co-host, Chris Pennant. Chris, how are you feeling after back-to-back days of podcasting?
Hanging tough, man. You know, hanging in there. So, I can't even follow that up.
I know, man. I'm digging it, though. I think we've had a lot of... The last two shows have been really fun to do with Ari and Madeline, and... You know, we have another awesome guest today, and he's on the line right now. You know him from Winsider. He's the co-host of the Winsider WNBA show, and he's the founder of the website, REA Schwartz. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. It's fun to be on somebody else's pod, so I don't have the pressure of hosting and kind of directing where it goes. So this is a treat for me.
Well, we'll take the pressure off you today, and we're excited to have you, though, man. Like, there's so much to talk about, and let's just get a little bit into it now. I mean, REA, Chris and I talked a little bit with Madeline and Ari about this in the last two pods, but there have been some bumps in the road leading up to the season with the league. We don't have to go into every single thing. Just, you know, there's been some things out there like Kelly Loeffler vocalizing racism and the league kind of being attached to that. You know, the EDD situation didn't help. And then there were some hiccups at the beginning of the players just entering the bubble and dealing with those difficulties. Just a lot of things for the W to figure things out right now and navigate this whole situation. Where is your headspace right now with where the league is standing with the week before the start of the season? Like, do you feel like once the games begin that things will start to settle in a little bit, or...
I sure hope so, because every day it seems anytime, at least over the last, I'd say probably month, whenever the league, you know, seems to be putting the right foot forward, they somehow trip on the other leg. So I would seriously hope. And like, look, for us who follow the league, it's been a very, very long off season, and tensions are high with COVID for everybody. I don't care what you say, like, things are just not normal, and everyone's a little bit more anxious. Everyone's a little bit more easily upset. So I think it makes sense. And everyone's on social media a lot more these days. So I think there's once we get back to the season, there'll be some semblance of normality, at least for the fans. In regards to being able to watch the season. So I think that would be really good, at least.
Everyone's on Twitter going crazy over, I mean, they have so many things to just tweet about and start arguments with. I mean, do you feel like maybe, at least on your end too, I mean, do you feel like things, are you going to be able to take a little bit of a breather in a week when this all, we finally get to that season opener?
No, yeah. cause I mean, for us, like we have a staff and, you know, with all the craziness going on, it's kind of taken away from our ability, in my opinion, at least to kind of prepare for the actual season, in certain degrees. Obviously we're excited and we're going to be giving the best coverage we can to the league. But I think definitely, you know, you're kind of enticed to talk all about, you know, the mousetrap and the bugs and all of that jazz and the COVID testing or whatever. And honestly, like, once we get to the season, then it's just, you know, another sprint of covering this. And and yeah, there is no calm time. My thing is just, I hope, I'm praying that we don't have what I have considered the biggest fear in my mind of the season is. And everyone keeps telling me, like, statistically, this isn't likely, but I like to live in hypotheticals. Hypothetically, what happens if you know, two players on your roster get injured and three players test positive for COVID, or the other way around, two players are positive for COVID and whatever it is. And like, you're already a team that's at 10 players or 11 players. And now you're down to a roster of active players that's five or six people. What's going to happen? Are they going to force you to forfeit? Are players going to play the full way through? The league has spoke about, you know, having players, having a system to quarantine players if you need to sign someone during the season, but there's still going to be a large delay with that because they have to go through the quarantine. So for me, it's just, you know, has anybody fully thought through on that part of the situation? Like, what's going to happen in that regard?
That's something that is going to be interesting, because I feel like they could prepare for a situation like that. Like, maybe tomorrow, fly some of these players in and have like a free agency pool, but maybe they're limited in terms of how many people they can house right now. The WNBA already has limited resources as it is, so maybe that's a factor into not being able to have a free agency. I mean, I'd love to have a free agency villa. Like, you see all these videos on Twitter about with the players showing off their villas. It'd be great to have, like, I don't know, like undrafted rookies in one villa and have veteran free agents in another, and like, maybe they can pull off something like that. But I mean, you're right. There's so much at risk here that I think people focus on COVID, but don't remember that these are athletes that could be injured during the season. The Sky dealt with that a lot last season. But Chris, what are your thoughts on that? I don't think we've actually discussed that.
Honestly, I haven't gone to the level of that Arya's gone to, because I hadn't considered injuries. I was just thinking, like, what if you start games and one person tests positive, then you have to test all of the people who were in proximity to that person. You know, unless there's a different policy that I haven't seen, it just seems that you have to test everybody who's come into contact with that player or that person in personnel, that coach or trainer, whomever. And then you have the possibility of a domino effect that, in my mind, just precludes or would have to lead to shutting things back down. So there's always, you know, we think in round numbers because we're base 10 species. So 10 games, and then somebody tests positive for coronavirus. And so what? You've done all this, created this bubble, brought players in, tested. Then you play 10 games. And then for what? You can't call that a season.
I really hope it doesn't get to that point. You know, I hate just focusing on the negative, because let's just get into this with where Arya, let's go into your hypotheticals here a little bit, right? Let's just say everything, it works out okay. I want to get your thoughts on where you think the Sky are going this year. I mean, I know you were a little bit skeptical about Chicago in the off season. You went on the Winsider show discussing the tiers of the WNBA.
I'm gonna get in trouble now.
No. So much time has passed, and I mean, the circumstances have changed dramatically, so you're safe. You're totally safe. But with that in mind, I mean, where do you see the Sky going this season and how they stack up against some of these other teams in the league?
Honestly, the Sky are a pretty interesting team for me. I'll come out and say it. I got the Sky higher than the Las Vegas Aces. I don't know if that's a hot take or a shocker. I'll kind of give you, in my mind, as of today, the top teams – in order. I got the Seattle Storm as the number one team by far in the league. Okay. Yeah. A dominant team that obviously, yes, that goes off some assumptions that Stewie and Sue are healthy, but the additions they've made and the growth during the offseason of the young players, I think, is just ridiculous, and this team is scary. Then you got LA, who is just star-studded and packed. Obviously, losing out on Shanae, losing out on Christy Tolliver are big. That being said, this team is still pretty stacked. And honestly, I think the roster build, first of all, we're not giving enough attention to Brittany Sykes. I saw Michelle Vopel talked about active players switching teams in a new team, who's going to have a big impact. And I was shocked that Sykes was not on that roster. She's a selfless player who can do so much for the team. And that's why I got them a little bit higher. And then it's kind of a toss-up for me between the Mercury, the Sun, and the Sky. So Sky fans, you can, you know, jump on my bandwagon of me saying that they're basically tied for third in this league right now. I think the Sky are a really, really interesting team. I think a lot of it depends on Diamond, and does she jump to that next level? I think that's something that a lot of people have been talking about, and it makes sense, right? She's that type of player who could very easily, and in my opinion, should be the star of this team, a team that has some, doesn't have a superstar right now, but Diamond is ready for that role, I think. And her athleticism, I mean, the woman takes two steps and it goes from one basket to the other. It's actually like she is a cheat code. She is a video game cheat code. But then also Azrae Stevens, you know, we haven't fully seen what she can do. We didn't get to see her basically at all. If I don't even think she played at all last year. Maybe she played for like one game, two games.
She had a couple of games on in the books.
Something like that. But, you know, has she fully healed? She's someone who I have been on the Azrae Stevens hype train since, you know, her name was called in the draft 2 years ago. And I think she's the type of player, and I'm going to repeat myself with Gabby Williams. These are players that are underrated, and we're not necessarily going to see how good they are even this season, because the WNBA season is so short. The amount of time that we get to fully judge and see a player go through that growth progression is so hard because it's such a shorter season than we see in all other sports for the most part. So for me, Gabby Williams, like, people love to hate on her. I mean, I think she's one of the most loved to hate on players in this league, wrongfully so, in my opinion. Yes, she was a very high draft pick. Yes, she came from UConn. Yes, you know, she's kind of a Swiss Army knife, I've heard people call her. But I always say it takes 3 to 5 years before we can truly judge what a player is. And she's entering into that window where we're going to finally decide, okay, is she a type of player that we think she possibly could be, or has she kind of hit her ceiling and she's plateauing? So I'm excited. And Azrae is obviously a little bit younger than that, so we're going to see where that goes. That's kind of like where my thoughts are, besides the whole, I don't know if we want to get into injuries. I guess we can call Colson an injury, but Lavender and Colson, I think, are two huge blows for me. And not to rehash pain, but if Jantel Lavender is in the game against the Aces, I don't think it comes down to that last shot.
That's a really interesting theory. I mean, I agree with you on most of those points, and especially with Azrae, I feel like if she's healthy and she's able to take over the minutes that Jantel is leaving behind, this team is built to maximize Courtney Vandersloot's game. And now if you bring someone in like Azrae, I mean, I just think that you give Courtney all the flexibility to run ragged in transition, or even the half court where the Sky weren't the best team in the league last year in terms of that. Like, Synergy breaks it down pretty well as well. But I think that Slutty has a lot of options in the pick and roll, or she can drive and kick to any of those starters on the team that are capable of hitting from deep. She has a lot to work with, and I think that's their path to winning a championship. But the biggest question mark is the defense still. I mean, they gave up almost 37 points per game in the paint, and that just can't happen if they're going to win a championship this season. I think that, you know, Chris, we didn't really talk too much about that, but maybe Gabby being able to move back to the four, which is a position I think she's more comfortable with. And we had a fun time with the point Gabby narrative last season, but I think it was Gabby and Diamond that were on Instagram Live, and someone asked a question about, will we see Gabby Williams at the point? Diamond then asked Gabby, and Gabby just didn't answer. I think she just completely avoided it. So I think she's kind of done having to go through that role. Part of me also feels like, going back to her development, REA, she's been in some really uncomfortable positions for a young player too. I mean, Amber Stocks, I don't necessarily think she was used the right way. Like, that Amber used Gabby the right way. And then James Wade used Gabby to kind of plug in the holes from last season when the Sky dealt with a few of injuries too. So, I mean, the upside's all there. And I think it all depends on the youth rising to the occasion. But even if like two out of the three in Diamond, Gabby, and Azrae, if two out of those three are able to hit their ceiling this year or like get close to it, I think this is a dangerous Sky team. I mean, where are you at?
Let me ask you, actually, because I haven't heard any hate coming Gabby Williams' way. Now, maybe I'm just like blinded by the Sky Show Shy and the optimistic Sky fans, but is it just the high draft pick and that she came from a school with the pedigree of UConn and people think she's underachieved so far?
I think it's that. I think it's also kind of what you were getting to, James, where, you know, she's been in uncomfortable situations and plugged into a lot of things. And there's two ways to look at that. You can look at that from a negative view of, you know, she hasn't been able to, and this is actually, I'll flip that. You can look at the positive view where she is so good at so many different things that you can put her into many different positions. So when they're hurting at, you know, at the point, they can throw her in there. When they need her at the four, they can throw her in there. But because you're moving her around, and this is where the negative aspect comes, because you're moving her around so much, she doesn't have the ability to focus in on one role and really grow and flourish in that role. Because, you know, she starts that on Monday and Tuesday, we need Gabby over here. We're going to move her over here. So again, like, it's almost because she's so well-versed, it's been hurting her. And as far as like people hating on her, I do think that there's, you know, the positive Chicago fans love her, but I do think there's been a good amount of hate because she was a high draft pick, because she comes from UConn, and just because unrealistic expectations. Like when she came out of the draft, some people were talking about how she shouldn't have gone that high because of her not having, you know, that specific aspect of her game that you can hone in on and say, this is what she is. Because I think we're 2 years in and we still don't know what she is. She could be a lot of things.
Definitely. And the Sky are actually kind of put in a position for next year to thinking about, do they re-sign Gabby? I don't know if it's next year or the year after that. I mean, they just have to kind of figure this out a little bit and figure out a role for her that where she's comfortable. And if you're Gabby Williams, do you really want to be just thrown around in different positions like this for your entire career? So, I mean, I think a underrated storyline for the Sky heading into this year and next year is just where does Gabby fit in? But for this team, I think they're really going to need her defensively because they did struggle last year in that regard. They had the third worst or fourth worst defensive rating as well. So, I mean, this team needs defense, and she really can provide on that end. It's just about kind of putting it together offensively, being able to get into groove offensively, quite honestly. So you said that the Sky were, they hover in that 3-4-5 range, tied for third. We'll let you go in that sense so that Sky fans don't go after you, like you just said.
I'm glad that somebody else thinks Seattle's the best team in the league because it was just me for a while.
Whoa, Chris. I agreed with you that the Storm – I mean, we talked about the Mystics being the best team before everything kind of went to hell, but the Storm definitely have to be up there, like you said, with their defensive ability. And I just think so high of Jordan Canada. She's probably one of my favorite players in the league outside of anyone on the Sky because she's unbelievable. Actually, Ari, how do you see – Jordan Canada fitting in with, you know, Sue Bird coming back and, you know, Jewel Lloyd being Jewel Lloyd?
That is just a freaking dangerous team. I mean, all right, if you ask me currently on this roster, Sue Bird's your third best player. And if Sue Bird's your third best player, and I'll be clear, it's behind Stewie and Howard. If Sue Bird's your third best player and she's still playing like we saw last time we saw her play, that's really scary. I mean, for me, the added benefit of Jordan is just she reminds me a lot of Renee Montgomery. Obviously, her three-point game isn't there yet, and maybe I'm just saying that because they're both small. But I just – her tenacity on defense. You know, a lot of times when I hate on small, fast players, it's their inability to control their speed at the finish. And Canada has that. If there's a player who you're going to throw in there, like, we need a steal right now because we're down a bunch of points, she's that person. Now, I know that there's been talk about seeing her start next and get, you know, Sue a little bit more off ball, whatever. For me, it's like, look, I get that. I do have some concerns just about, you know, the guard pairing of her and Sue defensively. I realize maybe that sounds hypocritical because I just said how much I love Canada. It just size-wise, it concerns me.
Yeah, you get taller backcourts and they'll still have some trouble.
Exactly. And like, look, again, I think Sue's a very capable defender even at her size. But I just think, you know, having Alicia Clark in there, having the variety of players that they have and rotating it through. And that's the beauty of this team, honestly, is that they can plug any one of their starters and still be putting out a top contention team. Like, a lot of times, you know, one of the critiques of teams in the W, I think, is, well, you don't really need to have so much depth. You need depth, but realistically in the playoffs, it's 40 minutes and you're going to push your starters basically to the edge. I think I completely disagree with that mentality. I think having good depth will do so much for a team. And this team, due to the injuries of last year, you know, like, I was on the Mercedes Russell for most improved player of the year last year. I mean, I think she should have won that. What she was able to do coming in from somebody who bounced around a couple teams after getting I forget if she was drafted or if she wasn't drafted. I think she was drafted by New York, and then she left. They cut her. She went to Seattle. Like, for her to play the way she did last year was mind-blowing for me. And, yeah, I mean, this team is just scary. I could talk about this team forever. I think they are, like, the heavy favorites. And I'll even say this. Everyone knows I'm well documented on having some I don't know what the correct term it would be, but having some reservations about Washington. A healthy Seattle team last year, I don't think we see Washington winning it all.
That's a whoo! That yeah, is, I will say, that's big. My statement was based on the fact that before the opt-outs and the other assorted injuries occurred, I looked at Seattle's lineup, and I thought a lot of the things that you did, especially like watching that playoff game against L.A., I really thought that they just needed one player back and that would have been a win, because they pushed them to the brink with basically Natasha Howard and Canada and Lloyd kind of running as much as they could, and Alicia Clark doing it. They maximized, and they only lost by a bit. They just ran out of gas.
I thought
they were number one before anything really started, before the bubble and anything.
Oh, no, I completely agree with you. And I would add to that, a lot of people don't give credit to the fact that Jewel Lloyd was injured for a good portion of the season also. So they literally had, out of their four best players, they only had one. And right. Natasha Howard, you know, carried that team. And in my opinion, even before the opt-outs, I think with DC losing Chrissy Tolliver, I like the Leilani Mitchell signing. I like the Tina Charles signing. I still think they kind of dropped in the power rankings just because realistically how they're going to do it. Now, LA, when they got Chrissy Tolliver and all the signings they did during the offseason, I think shot up, and I got a lot more excited about this LA team. But even with all of that, Seattle coming back, like, I heard Sue Bird in one of her interviews or one of her whatever they were calling with Megan Rapinoe, her Instagram live show. I heard her talk about how she's kind of viewing this as they're the defending champions because she didn't play last year. They didn't have their two best players playing last year, or, you know, two of their top players playing last year. So they view themselves as the defending champs, and I got to agree with her on that.
And you've got to look at – I mean, I think people talk about how the Mystics had an all-time offense last year, and they did. They deserved that. They had – like, every piece in that offense worked so well. But 2018, the Storm, I mean, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe they set the record for most three-pointers made. They have so much versatility in what they can do with Stewie, who I think I looked it up today. She has like a 7'1 wingspan.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I knew she – I mean, she's amazing. Anytime you watch her play, you notice that she is might become the greatest women's basketball player of all time, depending on how her health plays out in her career. It's not even just that she's an amazing basketball player, but she's just such an athlete. And I'm just excited to see her return. And I think she is going to benefit from this a little bit. And again, I really don't mean to come across as an asshole by saying that anyone can benefit from a pandemic. But for her to be coming off the most devastating injury a basketball player can obtain, I think that this really helps her in being able to come back. At least if she's not 100%, I mean, I'm sure that she can get hovering that, you know, 90% range. 90% of Stewie is an MVP candidate. So, you know, the Storm, yeah, I mean, Chris, I'm with you when you say that they're the best team, and Ari, you too. I mean, it's just, this team is going to be so stacked. And it'd be cool to see Stewie come back and win another MVP, because after all she's gone through, I think it's going to be the MVP race is going to be interesting this year. I see a lot of Asia Wilson buzz right now for the MVP. REA, do you have anyone in mind for MVP this year? I don't want to step on any future podcasts that you're doing. But.
No. I'll give you guys a little bit of a sneak peek. Winsider is coming out with I won't say who's doing the poll, but we are coming out with a poll of a variety, but people will be excited to hear who voted in this poll. But yeah, we are doing a poll of yearly awards, and somebody who consistently has, honestly, you know, shocking, is Brittany Griner. You know, a lot of people kind of forgetting about her, forgetting that the more and more we get down this road of Diana Taurasi getting older, and obviously the addition of Skylar. Because at the end of the day, let's be realistic, who wins these awards? It's someone who's, you know, playing the best on their team, and their team is being successful. And you're not going to, you know, you might have the greatest stats in the world, but if you're on a team that's, you know, I'll go with the 22 game season. If you're on a team that's 2-20, you're not winning MVP. I don't care what, like, and that's up for debate. You know, we can talk about what defines MVP and all that jazz. But yeah, I've been seeing a lot of talk about Asia Wilson, and I get it. I do think she's going to be a lot more of the workhorse, and I think she's going to be featured a lot more, and it's just going to benefit her and the team, in my opinion. But I could see Stewie. I could also see Brittany Griner. Stewie's an interesting one. I just wanted to point out, she's still, in my opinion, in that range of player growth. Like, I mean, she came into the league in 2016. She's still young. People forget about, she's only 25.
Aria, we don't want to take up too much of your time, but Chris, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about Aria's photography background. Do you want to get into that for a little bit?
Yeah, I'm really interested in that because there's been a lot of discussion around how to properly light and shoot in terms of both photography, still photography, and video, Black people and people of color. There was a really good article about it for Insecure, talking about the director, I think, of photography, cinematography on that show. And then there was an article this week with Viola Davis's cover shoot for Vanity Fair, where there was the first time in the history of the magazine that they used a Black photographer to shoot the cover. And there was actually some controversy around the pose. If anybody's listening, read up on that. It's really interesting. But Aria, I checked your LinkedIn before we did our show, and I saw that you had a background in photography. So, you know, coming into this, with the WNBA, and how so much of the league, especially with it being a professional basketball league, there's so many players of color. How do you approach when you're shooting, when you're doing photography, when you're trying to set things up for anything like that? And is there any advice you give your staff?
Yeah. So, I mean, well, first of all, I haven't seen the thing about Viola Davis. That's
definitely
really
check that out.
I will. And I might have seen the thing about Insecure. Did it talk about using a lot of different shaded coloring light?
Yes, it was really, really cool.
It was really cool. And I remember after reading that, I'll back up a little bit. For me as a photographer, and I think a lot of photographers will say this, it's painting with light. It's viewing the light. And once you see it through that view of where's the light coming from, how does it lay onto your skin? How does it lay onto the subject? You start to see things very differently. You start to realize how shadows work and all that jazz. For me personally, I do a lot of portrait work. I do a lot of headshot work. And it's, to simplify it, it's, you know, the positioning of the lights and using proper light modifiers that are very soft, even light.
Okay.
And honestly, like I live in DC. There's a lot of people of color in DC. So a lot of the clients that I get, I have to light like that. And it's always very interesting because it's more so than just, I don't want to like group people into you're white, you're Black, so I'm going to light you in this specific way. Because I think as a photographer, as an artist, you want to bring out, you want to talk to that person a little bit before you photograph them. Obviously, this isn't talking about sports photography where you can't talk to them while like, hey, nice shot. Let me get to know you while I take this photo of you. But when you're doing a portrait session, you want to get to know the person and really know their soul before you do any type of lighting. You want to get to know the person because then you can truly bring out their beauty. Because everybody, and this is so corny, but I truly believe it, everybody has beauty. And if you're photographing somebody, your job is to bring out that beauty. Or maybe you're doing it for like some other reason. Your job is to hide that beauty, whatever it is. So it's very interesting. And it was something that I don't think in the photography world is talked about enough. So I appreciate you bringing it up. Yeah, it's hard to like not get into technical terms and you know, oh, you got a short light them or do this, do that. But it's really about playing around and not being naive to thinking, oh, I'm just going to do what I typically do. And it's about being open about it and being willing to try different things out to, at the end, you know, share their beauty with the world. Because like I said, that's what you're trying to do. So maybe that was too much of a broad response. I didn't get specific enough for you, so I apologize.
No, that's fine. I know that it's not the same as doing a studio shoot when you're talking about shooting action in within a game. But I mean, there was a really, really good photo of Diamond to Shields and that block she had against Dawana Bonner in the playoffs. And even though I think, you know, it's going to be different with the Liberty not being at Madison Square Garden, but in thinking about arenas that light the building differently, I don't know if there's any arena that has something where it's either a challenge to shoot there or it's very conducive to shooting there. And you can get some really, like, really cool shots that accentuate not just the action, but kind of bring out, like you were talking about, the soul of that specific player in the photo.
Really interesting is that I don't know. I don't have a ton of history in, like, shooting sporting events because typically when I'm there, you know, like, something that I learned at a young age, because my dream was to photograph sport. Well, no, my dream was to be a football player. And I grew up to be 6 feet tall and like barely 100 pounds in high school. And I was like, all right, well, that's not happening. So it was a tough reality when I was the smallest kid on the football team, just getting destroyed every day in tackling drills. And then one day, like one kid joined the team for a week who is smaller than me. It was like the happiest moment of my life because then I wasn't the smallest and I could actually tackle someone. So it's really interesting. A lot of sports photographers are told to just trail one or two people on the court. So if this person's on the court, if Diamond Shields on the court, my job is just to focus on them. So you can set all your camera settings to that person's skin tone, to that person and the lighting in the building. And it makes life easier because then you're in a situation where, you know, you have the big zoom or the big lens that's zooming in on your subject. You're not tracing back and forth to follow the ball and get that. You can focus in on the one person and get a lot more quality images. One thing that I also learned is a lot of photographers, well, okay, there's the photographers that are hired by the league and the teams who get a lot more access. And for instance, in DC, I don't know if they do this at the new arena because I haven't spoken to the photographer since, but I know that when they used to play at Verizon or Capital One now, the photographer actually went up into the rafters and would set up strobe lights and connect it to his camera so that, and people, now that you've heard this, I guess we can't do it this season because we won't be at the games, but next time you're at a sporting event, an indoor sporting event, if you see some lights flashing, but it's not like a very bright and you're like, where's that coming from? Look up to the ceiling because often photographers put lights up there because what that does is it just gives you control over everything and it gets you enough light so you can get the natural light, but then you can also light the exact thing that you want to light.
Yeah, I've seen that with photographers. I can't remember when I was at a game and I noticed that and I kept looking around for a camera flash and then I realized where it was coming from, or I talked to some photographer friends and they're like, yeah, you set up lights that are linked with your camera so it flashes when you're taking a shot. But definitely, that's really cool. I know that if you're in our audience and you're thinking about a way to get into this photography, like especially game photography, is really cool. One of the guys who works at the Skies is a really friendly dude. I can't remember his name right now, but he's been there for years. Another photographer has been with the Skies since at least Allstate. And when you get a really good series of shots, I think it brings out so much more of the action.
Oh, I completely agree. Sorry, go James.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I mean, as a sports editor, I am always looking for people who can take great shots rather than trying to seek out great writers necessarily, because finding a great photographer changes everything for your section, whether that's online or in print. Honestly, like, to have someone with the who can comprehend, you know, this, I mean, that's just, it's an art form, and you have someone that can really execute, especially in sports photography, which, you know, I work for a journalism non-for-profit, so I sometimes have to report on the game and take photos, and I'm telling you, sports photography is remarkably difficult, so I tip my hat off to anyone who does it. REA, we have one last segment for you that I'm excited about. I did a lot of over-under segments when I was doing the radio show last year, and I'm bringing it back because I think you're the perfect person to do it with. So it's a pretty simple format. I'm going to give you some context, and then I'm going to give you a statement about whether you would take the over or under on it. Does that sound okay?
Yeah. Should you describe – I know what an over-under is. Should we describe what over-under is to the people who don't know?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. So – pretty much, I'm just like, an over-under is pretty much where you, someone throws out a number and you choose whether you take the over or under, depending on that situation. So the first one I have for you, REA, so I'm just going to give you some context. Diamond to Shields averaged 14.4 points per game in 2018, and she averaged 16.2 points per game last season. Will Diamond to Shields score more than or less than 19 points per game? Take, do you have the over or under on that?
Oh, you like found the sweet spot of not, like, if you would have said 18, I would have said over. If you would have said 20 or 21, I would have said under.
I want to make it difficult for you.
Yeah, you're making my life hard here. I like to be positive about Diamond. I think she's going to really grow, and the team is going to give her the ball more and give her more opportunity. So I'm going to go over.
Over. Okay. Next one. Courtney Vandersloot, she averaged 8.1 assists per game in 2017, 8.6 assists per game in 2018, and 9.1 assists per game last year. I have the over-under at 10 assists per game this year. Do you have over-under with that?
I got to go under.
Ooh. So this is the case I would make for it potentially happening. With less games and less, like, I could see Slooty being able to go with, in 22 games, in this season, be able to get 10 in each game potentially. That's just, well, the feeling where I'm at.
and you know what? With the shortened season, she might get like a 20 assist game and really up that average. So I hear where you're at. I mean,
I want to see it so bad, because I think she would be the first person in WNBA history to average 10 assists in this season, if I'm not mistaken. Actually, Chris, how about you? Would you take the over or under on that?
I'm feeling the over or a push at the very least.
Oh, push. Come on, Chris.
It seems like it would fit right in there, only because they have more available finishers and shooters, just adding Azaree Stevens, really. I know we didn't get into this, but Aria, I was talking with Aria Chambers, James and I were, and I think that she's really the X factor, the key to the Sky success. If she's healthy, if she's slashing, if she's a matchup mismatch with her height and her ability to handle the ball, I think that makes things very difficult for other teams to defend. And I think that that's just another person for Sloot to feed the ball to. Kalia Copper is going to be better. Diamond's going to be better, you know, barring any setbacks that we can't see right now. And Azaree just adds another dimension to that. And if everything maximizes, Gabby will be more comfortable in her outside shot if they need a catch-and-shoot person along with Allie. So I wouldn't be surprised to see 10 assists, but I'm going to waffle and go with the push.
I just want to say, when it comes to Azaree, I want to see the confidence on her offensively, but – what you guys were talking about earlier about the amount of points that Chicago Sky were giving up in the paint last year, Azaree is a paint presence defensively. Mm-hmm. So I'm very excited. I mean, she can block some shots. She got some long arms. She got that height. I think she's going to be a huge factor. I agree with you.
The last one, and then we will let you go. So we're going to talk about Azaree too. So she averaged 14.7 points per game in her last year at UConn. 8.9 points per game her rookie year, and she was only playing 20 minutes per game. And Jantel Lavender last season averaged 10 points per game last season where Ezra would, I would assume, take on that role. We're hearing a lot of buzz about maybe she will take on those minutes. Well, do you have to take the over under on her averaging 12 points per game for this guy this year?
You could have set it at 14. I would have taken the over. I am on the Stevens hype train. I am the captain or whatever you call the person who drives a train. The conductor. I am the conductor of the Azari Stevens hype train. The first thing I did when I started my season in WNBA 2K was trade for Azari Stevens. So I don't know if that makes me biased or if I'm the wrong person to ask, but I'm going over.
I think that is the perfect way to end this podcast. I know the Sky Show Shy is going to be so excited to hear that. I'm taking the over on that as well. How about you, Chris?
For 12 points?
12 points per game.
I think so. I'm going to go safe and say 13. Man, I'm glad that Arya is hype. I think I'm having the trouble getting like as excited as many other people are, just like the general depression of life. I would go 13.5, and I think that she can do it. I mean, just watching her tape from college and the time that she put in the last couple of years with Dallas, it's more than possible. I mean, that's what, 6 buckets and a couple of free throws? That's more than possible for her in playing 20-25 minutes.
Well, also you got James Wade, who's going to let her shoot. He's just going to say, let it fly, go for it. Like, he's the type – he is a shooter's coach, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah, he's got to be. That's his background, right?
Yeah.
I think the one thing that would stop her from doing that – and actually now we just spun this to be a little bit negative. But the one thing I think would stop her from getting to that mark is that James Wade also likes to go with the hot hand. We talked a little bit with Madeline, just because he does like to mess around with lineups, and he could, if you know, Azra cools off a little bit, he has a lot of pieces that he could just throw in there and let give her a break. I think that's the only way that she wouldn't get to that 12 points per game, unless, you know, barring any injuries, which I don't wish upon anyone. So I think that she can really get there, and it's going to be interesting to see how that offense is going to operate with how many people demand shots too. But yeah, well, Ari, thank you so much for joining us on the pod. Is there anything that you, I mean, you have so much to plug, but is there anything else that you want to that we should be looking out for on Insider?
Yeah, we got some exciting stuff coming through. Make sure to pay attention to us before the season starts. We got some cool announcements coming before that and during the season. You know what? Screw it. I'm going to do it. Sorry if I shouldn't have said screw it. Now I said it twice.
I called Ron DeSantis an asshole like 2 weeks ago. You're all good.
All right, cool. All right. I'm going to plug our Patreon. You know, at all of our staff, we work extremely hard, and none of us are able financially to do this full time, but we put in the effort of doing it full time and the hard work. And as I always say, you know, it costs less than a cup of coffee to show your support for what Winsider does. I obviously am biased and think we do amazing work and think we're very important to the growth of the league and the coverage of the league. But we believe in the league. We believe in the players, and we think that they should be getting more coverage. And I want to say thank you to you guys for not only being part of the Winsider network, which we're hopefully going to have more and more shows come on it, because I think it's just easy for fans to go to one spot and be able to absorb as much information about every team that they can. And honestly, I think, you know, I tip my cap to you guys. You guys do amazing work, and I'm excited for the season.
Thanks, man. We really appreciate that. And, you know, we were talking with Ari yesterday, and we brought up Winsider. We did a little bit of a shameless plug there, and she like interrupted, not in a negative way, but she interrupted and was just like, oh my God, I love Winsider. I learned so much from REA and Rachel's pod and Gabe. Love Gabe. He's also just doing such great work for you guys too. You know, she raved about you guys. So, you know, we appreciate you letting us be a part of it. And
she's the homie.
Yeah. she's amazing. Yeah. She's probably one of the most positive people I've ever met. So
she's but, awesome.
Yeah, man.
And so is Gabe. Yeah. And so is Rachel. And so is on it. Like, look, we can make a whole pod where we just talk about how amazing so many people who work. Cause think of like people don't understand. We all of us have this voice, and we're using our voice to grow the coverage of the W. But what people don't understand is the amount of effort that it takes to do this. And nobody is getting, like, if I were to, you know, come out from under a rock and go on to WNBA Twitter and see all the amazing people who are doing this work, I think you would be shocked to find out that for what, like, what they're getting in return for doing this. People don't cover the W because it is a huge financial backing or anything like that. People do it because they genuinely have a huge passion for the sport, for the league, and for the people playing in it. And I got to tip my cap to everyone who's part of it.
It's a sacrifice, but it's a necessary one. And I know, you know, Chris and I have such a joy covering this team. I mean, Chris, you've been doing it a little bit longer than I have, but in the last 2 years for me have been, it's just been so fun being able to cover this team and the league in general. But yeah, seriously, I mean, we went a little bit over, but really, thank you so much for joining us and giving us your time, because, you know, you're such a powerful voice in the WNBA community. And, you know, come, even if it was 5 minutes, we would have been happy. So thank you so much.
Hey, anytime. I'd love to come back and hopefully not upset the Sky fans more than I already have in the past.
We're at the point now where everybody's so behind their teams that they won't hear anything else. I want to get to like the 50-year anniversary of the WNBA and then see what the evolution is of the like support between players and teams and fans, and if it stays regional or what, you know. I want to see what's going to happen. But
I want to see more crazy fans. I want
more,
like,
crazy fans.
Yeah, like, here's my thing. I used to be like, and I don't know if I've said this publicly before, but I used to be that crazy guy at Minnesota Lynx games who, like, the team was up by 30 and I'm still like getting the whole crowd going and like don't have a voice for a week after the game. I specifically remember actually being at a game in DC. This is actually a really embarrassing story that I probably shouldn't say, but I will. Being at a game in DC, and DC was destroying Minnesota. And I think Minnesota went on to win the finals that year, or it was one of the years that maybe they didn't win the finals out of that 7 year span. But I remember Minnesota was like getting blown out by, you know, 30 points. And I'm not exaggerating. It was like 20 to 30 points. It was one of the worst losses I think I've ever seen the Lynx have in that 7 year span. And I remember standing there. I used to bring like 5 friends, if not more, because Minnesota, if you're from Minnesota, you stay Minnesota strong. So like if you move anywhere, you stay with your crew. And I had like 5 people with me, maybe more. We were just going crazy, like Deladon shooting a free throw. Maybe it was right before Deladon came. No, it was definitely before Deladon came. Like someone shooting a free throw, Dolson's shooting a free throw, and it's like miss, miss, miss. And you could see like the Lynx players were annoyed because they're getting their butt kicked. The Mystics players were annoyed because they're kicking butt and they're like, just shut up. You know, the game's over. Nothing's going to happen. But like, that is the true fandom that I think just helps propel leagues to that next level. I might get annoyed every once in a while when a crazy fan goes, you know, I'll say it, ape shit on my Twitter because I said something that offended their team. But I love that passion. I think it is so important for the growth of the league and for the rivalries and just for the fun.
You know, I've been thinking about that a lot the last couple of years, because I feel like that gets like beaten out of you as you get older. Like I would do that as a kid at White Sox games. I was standing on my seat from the first inning to the ninth, no matter what the score was or how far up or down the Sox were, I was into it. And when I was in college with Bradley, I was into those games. And then it felt like after you got out of school and you're an adult, you can't be that person anymore without drawing a lot of looks. Like, who's watching you? Like, where are you? Mm-hmm. Where's your people at? And I want that, and I felt it inside. So I'm glad that you have it. I'm glad that there's other people that do have it. And I agree. I think that kind of rabid passion needs to – we need more of that. We need more of that at – basketball games, at WNBA games, in sports.
Aria, if you're able to recover those external hard drives that we were talking about before the show, and they have any footage of you going crazy at that game that you were just talking about,
we need that.
Please post that. It to Twitter. That is content that every single person needs.
So the hilarious content that, you know, it was the last game, I think, that I allowed myself to be a fan. And this is probably dating me in a bad way. I don't know, whatever. When Lindsey Whalen in DC set the record for most wins as a player, myself, a good friend of mine, and at the time my girlfriend, now my wife, shout out to Anna, my wife, amazing lady, who I will fully say I got her to be a WNBA fan. And part of it was like, I wanted her to be a Lynx fan because I was phasing out because I couldn't be so biased anymore. And I was like, but then I can like vicariously live through your fandom. And that, and you know, she was a diehard Lynx fan for like two seasons. And then she was like, but I live in DC, and became a Mystics fan. And now it's really tough for me because I was really hoping, now we're going to have issues when we have kids and I'm like buying them little, you know, Simone Augustus throwback jerseys and all that's happening. But the video that the league published of, I had like a giant Lynx flag and it's me and my two friends. And and you can hear my hoarse voice scream, "Woo! Most wins ever!" And then Lindsey Whalen takes my phone and takes a selfie with us, which, by the way, was a horrible blurry selfie. and yeah, but you know what? I'm in the history books of that video, even though I'm sure the league would love to try and crop me out.
Oh my God, that's too good! You have to make that your profile picture on Twitter. I mean, you just have to.
I might do it. I might have to do it. If I can find the video, I might do that.
Oh my God.
Or are you saying the blurry one? Because the blurry one, it would be like, are you a robot? Have you been hacked? Because this is a bad photo.
I would love to see the blur. Honestly, anything you have would be perfect. That is so great. It gives, you know, the aggregators something to throw at you too. So that, oh my God, I'm so glad we got a chance to talk about that. That would have been, not having this on the pod would have been disastrous because that is prime content.
But now I'm complete, you know, I'm upfront about my biases. Every once in a while, my hominess, my homerness, whatever it's called, you know, shit rears its ugly head. But I always give like a preface of like, I grew up in Minnesota, you know, like for me growing up, I'm a diehard Minnesota Vikings fan. We never went, the earliest time I remember crying was because the Vikings lost. So for me to be in Minnesota for the, I think it was the first two championships that the Lynx won, and the first time during my lifetime that a Minnesota sports team won a championship. That's the first time I've, and I'm not ashamed to say, it's the first time I've ever been able to cry out of happiness because of a sports team. Well, so I have, you know, it's still in there somewhere, but I realize there's a greater cause. And I kind of got to stuff that down a little bit.
Yeah, you know, that line between journalism and fandom is tricky, but you have to do it to be effective at the job. And I think you can balance those two. It's just, again, it's really difficult to do it, but there's a way to do it and be an effective journalist. But REA, thank you so much for your time. Seriously, I think I've said that three times now, but really, thanks for doing this. And, you know, Winsider was one of my first WNBA podcasts, and it's one of the reasons I became so invested in the league. So I can't thank you enough for that and for joining us. This was an absolute delight.
Hey, man, all the pleasure is mine, I guess, or I'm honored, or all that jazz. I had a great time. Thank you.
Chris, thanks for hopping on, man.
Sure. Thanks, James.
Thanks for tuning in to another edition of the Skyhook Podcast. If you want to contact me or Chris, you can always do so by emailing our mailbag, which is theskyhookmailbag@gmail.com. One more time, that is theskyhookmailbag@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter. Our handle is @skyhookin, which is SKYHOOKIN. And definitely subscribe to the Winsider Podcast Network and our show. You can find both of those on Apple Podcast and Spotify. You can also find our show on Google Play as well. And yeah, thank you so much for tuning into this edition of the show, and until next time.